Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. It's kind of amazing to think that since the time of the Buddha, there have been every fortnight, every 7 days, 7, 8 days, people have gathered together at in various monasteries, various places, and have come, practiced, sat together, walked together, listened to Dhamma together, and supporting one another in Dhamma practice for over 2,500 years. It just seems an amazing thing, and although it's just a convention just to gather together during these times, the full moon, the new moon, the half moons, it's a good convention. It's something that allows ourselves to come together and make the evening and the night a time for thinking about Dhamma, to practice Dhamma, to be with people who are like-minded, who have similar interests, and who will support one another in Dhamma. So Ambayagiri has been here for maybe 15 years, and this has been going on from the very beginning. So today is a time of both a time of study and a time of practice. Listening to Dhamma, hopefully we may hear something that we've never heard before. Or if it's something that we've heard before, maybe we understand it more clearly. It may be something that will refine and correct, bring clarity to our own views that we hold. And it brings clarity of mind. Sometimes when we hear the Dhamma, it allows ourselves just to relax, to let go of all of our concerns in the world. To hear the Dhamma that brings forth clarity, peace, brings forth dispassion. It makes our path clearer to understand what should we do, what way should we follow, what things should we develop, what things should we cultivate, and what things should we try to abandon. So this is done both through by listening to things, listening to talks, listening or reading Dhamma teachings, and also by our own personal experience in our practice. Reading the heart, that's in the forest tradition, that is something that's regarded as most important, to really get to know yourself, because the things that we read in the books and the actual experience of these things, they're different, and we need to appreciate that. To have a map, some excellent teachings is of great benefit. But we also need to know, we need to walk that terrain, and we need to help ourselves together, because it's not an easy matter, practice. In the suttas, if you read them, the path actually seems very clear. You read it and seems like a very straightforward way, and it is. It's just that it's just ourselves that are crooked. And often the path is so much is correcting and making straight, which is crooked. And when we do that, we have to see, what is it that makes ourselves crooked? Where does that crookedness come from? Because it's conditioned. It doesn't have to be there. There are walls, there are barriers that we've built up that naturally make crookedness in a mind that doesn't have to be crooked. And speaking of barriers, these barriers aren't things that you can see with your eyes. They're not things that you can touch with your hands or your feet. It's something that's, these barriers are in the heart themselves. They create a maze in the heart. Just walking around in a maze, you don't even know where it is that you're going. You don't even know what the goal is like. And there's no real direction. It's just wandering here, turning left and turning right. But with teachings, you can get some sense of a straight path, a general direction in which one is trying to aim towards, things to look out for, things to watch out for. and things that will help you gain clarity in making right decisions, right choices in your life. It just reminds me of a story when I was on my way to Thailand. No, I was on my way to Japan just after my exchange program going to Thailand. And I met a school friend that I knew in high school. And he was working at the gas station and had been working there for many years. And I'd walk by the gas station every year, or every day, and I'd see him just working and working. And that year, I spent a year just doing some small work. I think, I forget what I was doing. Just making a little bit of money. And he asked me what I was doing, and I said, well, I'm on my way to Japan. And he said, oh, you're so lucky. I've always wanted to go to Japan. How did you get so lucky? And I was surprised by that, because this guy had been working at the gas station for years and years. And I just mowed lawns for like a summer. And I had enough money to go to Japan. It didn't make sense to me. What was preventing that guy? I mean, if he was really determined to go to Japan, I mean, he would have gone. He could have made it. It would have been easy to make enough money, really. You know, he lives with his parents. Doesn't have to pay for anything. Could have just saved up enough money. It's like, what, from Canada to Japan, it's like $1,000 or something like that. Can't remember. Not too much money. I mean, I mowed lawns for like half a summer, and I easily made that much money to go. It just made me think, like, these barriers, they're not just material barriers. There's so many barriers that prevent him from actually going to Japan. And it wasn't money. It was just so many other things. Anyway, I thought about that quite a bit, these barriers. And what makes that path possible? What makes... It's your interest, it's your desire, which makes you do that. And it's also the attachments, or lack of attachments. So chanda, we need a desire to go forward. It opens doors, allows us to move forward. So our attachments, they create barriers. Our intentions, let's just say intentions, they create a mental topography. There are ways that you can go, ways that you can't go, on account of the things that you do, your actions, what you think is possible, what's not possible, the things that you bind yourself to, the things that you free yourself from. And when you bind yourself to things, then you can't move forward. You're stuck in a way. It's like you create a barrier, you create a wall, and you wall yourself in with your attachments, and you can't move forward. Or if you have to move in a crooked way, you have to move here and there, and weaving in, weaving out, but there's no straightforward way. It's hard to gain clarity when we have complex lives, and we have so many desires that don't accord with one another. It pulls us in so many different directions. It's hard to gain clarity. It's hard to bring your attention, your energy towards one goal. Someone asked one of the teachers in Thailand what it was that he felt that he relied upon that allowed him to progress in Dhamma. And he thought about it for a while, and he said, Satcha. And Satcha is, in Pali, it means truth or truthfulness. Like Satcha Parami, the spiritual perfection of truth. And for him, that was what he found, was something moving from a place of not knowing, place of greed, hatred, and delusion, moving forward into a place of freedom, place of liberation. And that's what he relied upon. Having heard the teachings enough to put them into practice, it was bolstered by his satcha. He has insights, you have things that come up in your practice, and then you have to honor those things that come up in your life and act upon them. if you just have it inside and then and just let it just sit there and not act upon it, then it just dies and you don't go anywhere. Your practice needs to be both informed and then you need to bolster it and move forward with it. Satya creates a straightforward way in our practice. And it refines. What happens when there's no satya? When there's no satya, there's crookedness, there's dishonesty. Both to other people and then to yourself. You can ask yourself, what happens to a mind if you lie or when you don't tell the truth? You can ask yourself first, well, why do we lie? Why do we not tell the truth? And usually it's just to protect yourself. There are many reasons. One, to protect yourself, and maybe two, to present ourselves in a way that we're not. Because we want to be happy and we want to be looked upon in a good way by others. But when we have attachments and things that pull us into doing things that are regretful, that are hurtful, are things that we feel ashamed of, then what do? We don't want other people to know. Because if other people know, then it will hurt us. We'll feel we're somehow a lesser person than who we are. And so we lie. Or we don't tell the truth. But then what happens to the mind? It's like it gives you a license to override what's true. It opens up 1,000 doors of dishonesty, 1,000 ways the mind can go and proliferate in a direction one can take and completely discount what's true. The result is that, one, you have many different avenues to take in which you can present yourself to other people. And that seems like a good thing. It seems like you're protecting yourself. But the result is that it causes the mind to be fragmented into so many different ways. It creates a sense of agitation in the mind, a sense of unstraightforwardness. There's so many things that we must think about, opportunities or choices to make. And we choose not to take the truthful path. And so on that truthful path, we feel if we go in that direction, there'll be some kind of problem, there'll be some kind of danger. There'll be something unpleasant at the end of that road. Whereas we think through our lies, there'll be something pleasant, there'll be something good, hopefully there, something that will be better than what's true. And so we train ourselves in untruth and dishonesty, and because of that, the mind becomes complex. And we hurt other people, and we hurt ourselves. And it's not conducive to the path. It's hard to go to... the end of suffering by a way of that's not true. You can't see a path very clearly when one lies, when one's dishonest, when one's not straightforward. One-pointedness is all about making the mind straightforward. And without one-pointedness, without calm, we can't see things clearly. So truthfulness is something we have to value. You don't take my word for it, just consider on your own. What is that like? To be straightforward. Wouldn't it be nice to live your life in a way that's utterly straightforward? To always tell the truth. To always be true to yourself. And it can be done. Because when you lie, then it's like you've created something that's just not true. And just think about all the times that maybe you've lied or been dishonest. And why is that? It's just natural. Everyone does that to some degree. They always say that the Buddha never told a lie in all those lifetimes. But what about all the lifetimes before all those lifetimes? Everyone's lied before. So when we try to forge our path forward with truthfulness, ask ourselves all the time, just honoring what we find is truthful about ourselves and shedding away those things that aren't true. Also coming to see that maybe if we tell the truth, maybe it will hurt to some extent. But it can change. When that truthfulness grows, then there's a certain satisfaction that comes from telling the truth. And our sense of self becomes replaced by being one who's truthful. So you may suffer, you may experience loss when you do something wrong and then you tell the truth and then you have to confess to something that's been embarrassing or something that feels it should be beneath you. But then the result of it is that you're getting rid of something that you're trying to get rid of anyway in your practice. That false sense of self, that sense of protection, protecting that which is false. It's not worth it anyway. There's a certain amount of coolness that comes with telling the truth, just letting go. And then when that happens, it develops your sense of consciousness too. Because when you're committed to truthfulness, it means that you have to be more careful with your actions. When you're more careful with your actions, it's easier to become more true. So they support one another in that way. When you feel the burn of making mistakes again and again and again, it forces yourself to be true. And although maybe you make these mistakes, at least you can feel you're truthful to yourself. And that calms the mind down, makes the mind still, makes the mind bright, because at least you know that you're trying. You still make mistakes. You're still maybe greedy, still hateful, but at least you're true. And you move forward in that way. And truthfulness is like that. It starts out small. Small, like a seed. And a seed is something that it's not very hardy. It can be easily destroyed. You have to take care of it. You have to water it, look after it. And then it grows, and then it's small. It's like a little seedling. And it's, it's not very strong. You have to take care of it, look after it. But then it gets bigger, and it starts to be able to support itself. It starts to, its roots start to grow deep into the earth. And it gets stronger, it gets thicker, it gets taller, wider. And as it grows, then at that time, whatever it is that you're growing, it will in time bear its own flowers and bear its own fruit. And virtue is like that. Whatever it is that we take, they start out small, then they grow. And then later on, they bear our fruit in practice, whether it's truthfulness, whether it's sila, restraint, Samadhi practice, our investigation, any of these qualities that we may read about in the suttas, contentment, fewness of wishes, they have their own levels of maturity. They start out weak, then they grow up into a kind of a middling stage. Then later on they gain strength, power, they have vitality. And not only that, then they'll give back to us. So something like satya, truthfulness, you strengthen it. Over time, it's something that it grows beyond a certain stage, and it's something that it can help you. It bears its own flowers and fruit, and that's something that can be your provision for the practice. Something that it's no longer something small. It's like a vehicle. It can take you forward. You grab onto it. You give it the right direction, and it can move through your obstacles in your life. So with Satya, this teacher, he said, for example, on the one pra, you know, he makes a determination. It's like, today, I'm not going to lie down. It's not a matter of like how you feel, what you think about. When truthfulness is strong enough, it locks you, and it pushes you beyond your obstacles. It's like you take something, you grab on, and it pushes you through something. It's like you're swimming in the water, and then you get something like some kind of vehicle, or maybe a dolphin. You grab the dolphin, and then it you don't have to rely on your own arms and legs. You grab onto it, and it carries you forward because it has its own power, its own strength. So truthfulness can carry you through in that way. With truthfulness, it shuts all the doors of dishonesty. So things become clear. There becomes a straightforward path. The mind doesn't proliferate and think about going right or left. There's only forward. There's only one direction it can go. It only goes the way that's true. And you can call that ujjupatipanno, straightforward practice. And this is one of the characteristics of the Sangha, Noble Arya Sangha. With an Aryan, it's said that the path is straightforward. They practice in a straightforward way. It doesn't deviate, doesn't go left, or it doesn't go right. It knows the path, and it only goes forward. Things become more straightforward, more simple. Its energy is pooled into all the things that need to be cultivated, and all of the things that are a hindrance, that are an obstacle, that are not the path, the doors are shut down. They shut down, till there's only just one corridor, one path to follow. And this is in the mind. whatever that looks externally, that's one thing, because everyone's different. Some people are like this, and some people are like that. But the mind of a practitioner who's really straightforward, there's only one way. There's only a straightforward way. How could it be otherwise? Is it even desirable to think that the path should be crooked or bent? It's nice to just think, even if the mind doesn't feel concentrated or feels worried, it's caught up in so many things, just to think about what it would be to be straightforward, to be honest, to just let go of everything and just let the Dhamma take care of you. Let it push you forward. Reject all of the obstacles that are in your way. Make that important. So many of the teachers have relied on that and just said, well, who knows how many lifetimes it's been that we've just been, you know, doing this or doing that, getting caught up in this and that, devoting ourselves to various kinds of sensual pleasures. If the Buddha is correct, then we've pretty much done it all. We've said it all. We've thought it all. We've heard it all. We've felt it all. We've smelt it all. We've tasted it all. It's just, we've forgot it all. And Lumpa Cha said, I'll just devote myself to this lifetime to practice Dhamma, no matter what it takes, no matter how many tears are shed. And just devote yourself to the practice. Because what else can you do in the end? I mean, everything else is just a cause of suffering. Devote yourself to goodness in the best way that you can. Just try to make yourself more straightforward, more honest, more energetic to the extent that you can. Devote yourself to Dhamma. Let go of that which isn't Dhamma. Seems to me that's what it takes. I'm not saying these things just to make this path seem intimidating. I don't mean that in any way at all. I only mean that to bring up the quality of truthfulness and to really look into it, see what it has to offer us, see what can be refined in this quality, see where it can take us. I think the practice of truthfulness is something that, it's not just something that's, it involves a certain amount of reflection upon yourself and your actions. It's something that can be daunting because there are so many things within us that cause ourselves to be crooked, that prevent ourselves from being truthful. And so that's frustrating when you're up against these things and you feel you're not capable at this point to being completely straightforward and honest. And you have to just accept that, and that happens sometimes too. But still, it's good to revisit and look at this and just see that one day you can. One day you could be true. One day you can be straightforward. And we can just move towards that as best as we can. I think the day will come when as things mature in the practice and our sense of truthfulness gains real strength and maturity, and there'll be joy that comes from this practice. In the beginning, of course, it's so arduous and difficult and can be frustrating and mixed with both pleasure and pain. But as these different dhammic qualities become established within our hearts, they'll carry us through. And the Dhamma will gain its own strength and will gain its own power and momentum, and we'll be able to rely on that more and more and more. But in the beginning, then we have to take care of it as best as we can, protect our hearts from the things that are going to bind us, the things that are going to stop us, the things that cause crookedness, that cause regret and worry, bring up all the mental hindrances in our mind. Just do everything that we can in order to clarify the mind, make it bright, make it straightforward. So a night like this is a good night to do that, to be thinking about Dhamma, to be reflecting, to see what it means to be an honest person. Sometimes it's just something you can bring up in your mind as you're sitting here. Just think about it, and that's can be enough that can bring gladness to the mind. Just imagining yourself as someone just straightforward, that you're capable of just letting go of every single obstacle on the path, letting go of every single defilement, can bring gladness and energy to the mind, clarity. And when that clarity comes in, we see things more clearly. We're not so bound up in the world, because all of these attachments, they're the things that bind us down. And they don't allow that potential that we all have to see things clearly, to allow ourselves to look 360 degrees. When the hindrances are weaker, when they're gone, we can see things clearly. It allows us to move forward in a truthful way. And we can contemplate Dhamma, see things in a way that will be letting go of defilement, see things as impermanent, see things as suffering, see things as not self. When we can do that, we look at the five khandhas, the form, the four elements that are composing this body. We don't have to think, may our body be thus, may our body be not thus. It's not ours to control. And we can feel okay about that. Same with feeling. May my feeling be thus, may my feeling be not thus. It's not so much of an issue anymore. When the hindrances are gone, it allows us to just let go of that. It's not ours, we can't control it. Our perceptions, we see this, we see that, we like this, and we don't like that. That's this, and that's that. It's just vipaka, it's old kama. It comes up and it says it's this and it's that, and then we attach to it. But when the hindrances are weak, then we don't have to buy it. We don't have to attach to it. Maybe it is and maybe it's not. It's not ours, it's not self. It's just conditioned, it came up on its own. And our mental formations, all the thinking, the proliferating, the mental activity that comes up, our intentions, the thoughts. It's just all old karma, just coming up on its own. It's not yours. Just step back. You can step back from that and just see it as not self. What does it have to do with you? It's just doing its own thing. It's a condition and mental formations. It's just a faculty. It's providing its own function. But you don't have to identify with it. And consciousness, the eye sees a form. The ear hears a sound. You know, all this consciousness arises. It's just doing its own duty. It's its own sphere. It's its own faculty. You don't have to worry about it. You just sit back and watch and look. Be mindful of that. When there's no mindfulness and the hindrances are strong, then all of these things that we come in contact with, all the things that we attend, form, feeling, perception, mental formations and consciousness, they all become the playground for our kilesa, for greed, hatred, and delusion. But when we have enough power of mind, when there's clarity, we take mindfulness. Lumpa Cha, he used this simile. It's like you take mindfulness and you give it the sheriff's badge. You turn the villain into the sheriff. And you let it go and let it clean things up. And that you can do that with awareness. You give the badge to, you give the Dhamma to your mindfulness and let it clean things up on its own, sort things out. So I don't have really that much to say tonight. That's all that really comes to mind. Only that tonight is one pra, and it's a good night to put forth effort to the best that you can. And try to make it. Sometimes it's good to make a determination. I'm going to stay up till 12. I'm going to stay up all night. I'm only going to eat 10 pieces of chocolate or whatever. So. Whatever it is, it's always a good opportunity to develop a sense of satya, of truthfulness, to hold to that. And thus you're starting to create a strength and a power within you. And if you nourish that, cultivate it, in time it will grow and it will become a refuge, it will become a vehicle for your own Dhamma practice. So these are some reflections this evening.